So glad to welcome Joel Kilgore back into our studios. It's been a little bit since we've had you in to talk. The Homeless Person's Bill of Rights is an issue and a document that's been discussed quite a bit over the last year, three years, Joel?
5 years.
Oh, geez. I know I lose track of time in terms of I think, oh, you were just in the studio, and then I look and it was 7 years ago. So I know that happens to me, but because time does tend to pass when you hit a certain age. So the conversation has been ongoing for a long time. There have been some steps. The city council has addressed a couple of pieces of the Homeless Person's Bill of Rights, but every year various organizations that work with people experiencing homeless get together, they meet, they take stock, and then things move forward or they don't. Where are we, in your opinion, right now?
On the issue of homelessness?
Life, the universe, and everything. Well, let's start with the Homeless Person's Bill of Rights.
Sure. Well, we did, like you said, we had some significant successes recently with the city council voting to overturn two city laws that we felt criminalized and unfairly targeted people experiencing homelessness and poverty. The city's ban on begging and the city's ban on sleeping in your car were overturned unanimously by the city council. In addition to that, the city council has requested that the mayor's office come up with a plan within 6 months. So actually, we're closing in on that pretty soon, that timeline, for hygiene facilities for people living outside. As you can imagine, somebody who's living in their car, living in a tent, has a really hard time accessing just basic hygiene facilities, bathrooms, of course, but also where do you clean up in the morning
right. To
get ready for work or for school. So those were our successes. The next steps that we're looking at right now involve camping. The city currently has a ban on camping in public parks, although that's been interpreted to apply to all city property. Our position is that we cannot ban people from sleeping outside in the absence of an alternative. And that has actually been upheld recently by the 9th District Court out in the western part of this country. There was a case involving this city of Boise's own camping ban, and the 9th District ruled that a city cannot criminalize people for sleeping outside in the absence of another place to live.
Now, I'm curious. There have been instances where folks have refused to go to a shelter. There perhaps has been room at CHUM, and they have elected not to. They've said, no, I don't want to go for a variety of reasons. Occasionally, the reasons are connected to mental illness or substance abuse. Sometimes reasons are connected to I've had things stolen before, or I was assaulted at a shelter and I don't feel like I want to go there. Is that the same? Does, if someone says, I'm going to camp because these are the reasons why I'm not going to the shelter, is that the same as not having an alternative?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, I suppose, for the courts. From our perspective as a coalition, yes. In fact, one of the points of our local Homeless Person's Bill of Rights is that people need to have the autonomy to refuse shelter. And for all the reasons that you mentioned, plus mental health. There are people dealing with anxiety disorders who can't live in a crowded environment like that, people living with people on the autism spectrum, people whose abuser is in the shelter, families who would be separated if they went into shelter and feel like it's the most safe option is for them to stay together in a car. We can't take people's autonomy away from them simply because they're experiencing homelessness, and we can't assume that one size is going to fit all. And that isn't to say that CHUM doesn't do a great job trying to house people.
Oh, absolutely.
But it isn't the most appropriate option, and it is
not
fairly
everybody.
Crowded. And we also need to, I think the community needs to understand that CHUM and pretty much all shelters in our area are at or over capacity and have been for many years. So it's an incredibly crowded environment, and frankly, the shelters don't have capacity to serve everybody who's experiencing homelessness in our community.
I'm old enough to remember when the state hospitals were still functioning, and many times people with chronic mental illnesses were housed in state hospitals, and there were many problems with that module, or not module is not the right word. Many model is the word I'm struggling for. There was very little autonomy. The state and the federal government was very paternalistic about the whole thing. So in essence, in my view, from the outside, they threw the baby out with the bathwater and turned these people loose and said, figure it out. Communities, figure it out. How are we doing 30 years later figuring that out?
Oh, no good.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen...
Failing.
So the numbers... Failing, yes. The numbers of people experiencing homelessness go up and down year by year, but the trajectory is up. Increasing numbers of people since the late 1970s and early 1980s has been increasing annually, not just in Duluth, but across the country. And the fundamental issue is the lack of affordable housing. And you're exactly right that the institutionalization was not the correct answer for people, but people were released without an alternative and without a housing plan in place. And that continues today. So, Duluth, for instance, has the least affordable housing market in the state of Minnesota. People are making more and earning less than they are they're earning less and the cost of housing is more than anywhere else. So,
I've talked with a realtor friend because I've puzzled for many, many years about why this exists when I know that there are parts of our region where it is possible to just build more housing and just build more apartment buildings and just build more blah, blah. And I have a better understanding about some of the challenges that Duluth faces in terms of just building more housing. But is it just a question of money that or do we lack infrastructure to have an organization come in at some point and say, well, we'll build, we'll buy up some of these tax forfeited properties, or we'll buy up some of these properties and we'll refurbish them and we'll make small pockets of affordable housing throughout the community? It seems like, of course, it's the problem with everything. Is it money?
I think it's complicated, but money's a big part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, we need the resources. Housing, construction costs in Duluth are incredibly high for a number of reasons, including just our geography. It's really, you go down a few feet and you hit bedrock.
Well, and it's rock. And I said, well, what if you go out of town? And my friend looked at me and smiled and he said, then it's swamp. And so it is a challenge to just build more, some of the farming communities with wonderful land in every direction can buy up farm fields and just put up housing for miles. And that's maybe not going to be an option here. But there does seem as though, with an old housing stock, that it would possibly be possible to, why don't flippers come to Duluth and fix up houses and make like huge profits or something, or even make little tiny profits and make affordable housing for regular people?
Well, we've seen that when those houses are flipped, they don't become affordable.
Right. So. Well, so they have to be just turned about a quarter turn instead of actually flipped, just kind of tweaked a little bit. So again, money.
Yeah. And we did Affordable Housing Coalition did the math on this about a year ago, and Duluth has lost about $3 million adjusted for inflation since 1996, $3 million annually from the federal government for housing supports. So this current administration is very hostile to affordable housing, but it's not alone. That money has been decreasing annually. And those are resources that our housing nonprofits need to be able to invest and build at a scale that will actually make a difference. We need several thousand new units of housing for low to moderate income people, and right now we're building them at a rate of about 17 a year. So we got a 100-year climb to get out of this crisis at this current rate. So we definitely need to invest more resources. The governor's housing task force, which Mayor Emily Larson sat on, has one of its top recommendations is that the state create a dedicated source of funding for housing. So hopefully we can see some new resources on the state level coming in soon. In the meantime, as a city, we're going to have to get creative.
Now, hasn't there been conversation about a dedicated source of funding to help with housing here in our community?
Correct.
That's been talked about on the local level.
Yes.
And I've attended a number of those discussions. Where is that?
In limbo. It hasn't moved anywhere, and for the same reason that probably it's been really slow to move on the state level, is that the city just can't identify a source of revenue to support that. So,
to me, it seems to go back to, I hate to say public relations, but in essence, public relations, in the sense that, first of all, I think there's a misconception, and it's alive and well in living on social media and probably in everyday lives, that people experiencing homelessness or experiencing poverty are lazy and they're getting and they want handouts and that they're getting what they deserve, that somehow they chose this because they just didn't want to work hard. And there is a lack of understanding about mental illness and substance abuse, and it seems as though it's like maybe a big infusion of cash almost just to do a public relations campaign, not necessarily public relations, public education. Because if we see people as our friends and our neighbors, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be moved to do something, even if it's a little bit. A tiny tax increase, for example, a tiny something or other. I would imagine most people would say, oh, absolutely. What's your sense of that? Is the stigma against people experiencing homelessness, the stigma against people who are poor, responsible for the foot dragging? Or because they are poor and don't have political clout, things can't move forward?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's probably a little bit of both. If we take a step back and look at statistics of housing insecurity in Duluth, we'd see that most people who are facing housing insecurity, people who are paying 30% or in some cases more than 30% or in some cases 50% of their income for housing, most of them are working people. So part of the problem has been our language around housing. For a number of years, the city talked about workforce housing and focusing on development of workforce housing, but they were talking about people who are making significantly more than your average renter. The workforce in Duluth includes people who are making $15,000 or $20,000 or $25,000 a year, and those folks are also struggling to find housing that they can afford. So we do need to frame the issue a little bit differently, understanding that the root cause of homelessness is essentially the lack of affordable housing, connected to that, low wages. There are people experiencing homelessness who are also suffering from mental illness and chemical dependency. Like any condition of poverty, the people who are standing closest to the edge of the cliff are going to be the ones to fall off first.
Right.
So there's a greater percentage of people experiencing those things who are homeless. But that's not the root cause of homelessness. So we need to start addressing those fundamental economic factors. And when we do, we're going to find that it's going to lift up a lot of people in our community who are also struggling, working people who don't have any issues with mental illness and don't have any issues with chemical dependency. I think clout is another concern. And that's one of the reasons why the Homeless Persons Bill of Rights Coalition was formed, to give voice to the very people who are living outside under bridges, in cars, who don't feel like they're heard. And the only way that can happen is when they organize and mobilize together.
Something that's been pointed out to me before is that whatever you might think about people who are living in poverty or who are working poor and who are struggling, is that regardless of what you might think of them and they chose or they made crummy choices or whatever, their kids didn't choose this. And that so many kids are living with housing insecurity and with hunger. And if nothing else, we should be trying to make things better for the kids, because most people don't blame the kids.
Yeah.
and would reach out for kids.
Correct.
If people are concerned about issues of homelessness and how do we try to find a solution to this, it seems that there are a number of cool organizations available in the community that they could become a part of to try to work toward finding a solution. What are some of the organizations or steps or what kind of recommendations can you make? Join this organization, write this letter, talk to this person. If people want to try to make a difference in a community this small, you're lucky because you can go and talk to the decision makers in person many times. You don't have to write a letter to a faceless representative. You can actually make an appointment, go in and talk to somebody. Who should we be talking to?
Well, I think the first step is to educate ourselves. I mean, you're right that there's a lot of misinformation about homelessness and who people are who are experiencing homelessness. So the very simple step is that person that you see on the street that you assume is homeless, to take a moment to talk to them and learn a bit about their story. Engaging and volunteering and supporting the many organizations that you mentioned, CHUM, ACO, LSS, Lifehouse, Loaves and Fishes, that are working directly with people experiencing homelessness, I think is another important step. We need to make affordable housing the number one political priority in this community. The reason that streets get fixed is because people get angry about the pothole and then they call the mayor.
Right.
And we need to have that kind of energy, that kind of political momentum around affordable housing, because it's just as much of a crisis in our community as anything else. So I think when you have the opportunity to talk to your elected officials, your city councilors, your county board members, to make sure that they know that affordable housing is a priority for you. And I'm assuming that most people listening to this have their own stories of struggling to find housing that's affordable and safe in this community. You know, a majority of renters in our community are paying more than they can afford for housing. So this is not an issue that's unique to people who are living on the streets. And a lot of us, unfortunately, because of the way the economy works, are one step away from being under a bridge ourselves.
Talked about that most working people, and it sounded like, you know, we're talking about how the middle class is defined, of course, is kind of a slippery slope. But, you know, people that you would say, oh, they've got a pretty decent job, don't have $500 in savings. And so they are, you know, a couple of missed mortgage payments or a couple of missed rent payments away from homelessness themselves. So
yeah, that's actually increasingly common. I mean, we get a lot of calls at Loaves and Fishes from people looking for help. And unfortunately, so I live in our men's house, and we probably turn away 30 guys a day. And more we're getting calls from people that start with, like, I'm really scared. This has never happened to me before. Last year I had my own home and I had a job, and now I'm living in my car. So yeah, absolutely. It really could happen to any of us. Or imagine one medical crisis. Most of us are one medical crisis away from homelessness or poverty.
And even with insurance, a catastrophic illness is with the part that you're left to pay is going to wipe your family out. Chances are. So, elected officials.
You can follow the Homeless Persons Bill of Rights Coalition on Facebook. I think it's a really easy address. It's Facebook.
We'll look it up and we'll get a link set up so it will be easy for folks.
Right to rest.
So it'll be easy for folks to find. We'll make sure that a couple of other links are here so that they're easy for folks to find. And we'll keep having conversations and hoping that things move forward. Joel, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Lisa.
Joel Kilgore, our guest this morning. He is with Loaves and Fishes and has been a longtime activist and spokesperson on the issues of trying to cope with our affordable housing crisis and helping to support people experiencing homelessness.